And now we turn to the subject of ice and the ice trade as a heat wave hits Europe. In Europe, the hot, dry weather has sparked wildfires in forests from Portugal to the Netherlands. 40 deaths have been attributed to temperatures that have soared to 100 degrees Fahrenheit or higher. Pope John Paul II has urged people to pray for rain. Hikers in the French Alps are being warned of possible avalanches due to melting glaciers. In England, the heat has closed the London Eye, the big Ferris wheel on the banks of the Thames River, because the heat made its glass capsules unbearable. So what do you know about the ice trade or about the heat wave in Europe? Join us. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email TOTN at NPR.org. Gavin Waitman joins us now. He's someone who knows a thing or two about the weather in England. He was in London yesterday when the temperatures broke a record reaching 100 degrees. That for the first time ever. He also knows about staying cool as the author of The Frozen Water Trade, A True Story. He joins us now from Norfolk, England, where he's escaped on holiday. And Gavin, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Good evening. It's good evening here. It's good afternoon over there.
What is London like at 100 degrees?
Well, it was pretty unbearable, really. Most people don't have air conditioning or anything like that. So we just sweated it out yesterday. We did manage to eat a bit of lunch in the garden with a sort of umbrella up, but every time you moved, you were sort of covered in sweat, and you just sort of stuck it out, really. And we only had a small amount of ice in the refrigerator, and I made a few ice drinks, but you just sort of sit quiet until it goes away. And normally in England, it goes away fairly quickly, but it was unbearable. I was very glad I wasn't on the underground train or any form of public transport. We didn't have to go out, fortunately. But I'm in the countryside now, and it's quite cool, and it's a tremendous relief.
People don't understand. I lived in England for 4 years, and you'd think of going to the movie house, but often they are said to be air-cooled, a big difference, not air-conditioned.
That's right. I think by tradition in this country, people went to the cinema in winter in order to get warm because they didn't have central heating and that kind of thing. One or two shops have air conditioning now. One of our local shops, a news agency, has installed air conditioning, and you can see people going in there not to buy anything, but just to sort of cool off for a few minutes, you know. But air conditioning is not very widespread, and I don't know anyone whose house is air-conditioned here, whereas when we stayed with a friend of mine in Toronto a few summers ago, their house was air-conditioned. I knew nothing about air-conditioning, really, and by mistake, I turned the thing down to Arctic and froze everybody overnight. But we just opened the window and lie there like sort of people out in India in the 19th century and just sort of swelter.
We have a phone call from Janet, who is on the line with us from Frankfurt in Germany.
Mm-hmm. I can say the same thing. It's hot here, 100 degrees.
Good Lord.
And we have no air conditioning. Very, very few people have air conditioning. My apartment faces west, and from 2 o'clock this afternoon until sundown, I had it. So now I've opened the door, and a little breeze has come in. This afternoon, I sat in a nearby park, and people watched and tried to not think about how warm it was.
Germany, I assume, like Britain, has very little in the way of air conditioning.
I know no one among my acquaintances, and I know a lot of people here in Frankfurt that have air conditioning. No one.
And the thing about it, I guess, it's inescapable. There's no place to go, and it's incredibly debilitating. You wake up in the morning, and it's not like you got much sleep, is it?
Oh, I sleep very well. I put myself a fan, turned it directly on my bed, and it works.
Well, Janet, thanks for the call, and keep cool.
I'll try. Buy myself an ice cream cone.
There you go.
Goodbye.
Thanks very much. And Gavin, she mentioned the critical word ice, that's the reason we actually called you in the first place,
right,
to talk about the ice trade. First of all, you're English. How did you start writing about the ice trade in North America?
Well, I've written a number of books about the history of London in the Victorian period, and I used to make a lot of television programs, and I kept coming across this story that Queen Victoria had got ice from Massachusetts in the 1840s, and it seemed to me incredible. And the story stuck in my mind, and I thought at some point I'd go and investigate, and I did. And I discovered, in fact, that a couple of guys from Salem had exported lake ice, natural ice, to London in the 1840s. And it was a bit of a fashion for a while, although they never took to putting ice in their drinks here or anything like that. They just mainly used ice to keep food cool and so on. Although there are reports that people would put a block of Massachusetts ice in London, which they'd got shipped across the Atlantic in sailing ships, by the way, just with insulation from sawdust. There was no refrigeration to stop the ice melting. And they would put it in the corridor, and it would cool the house down a bit. But it was only the wealthy who had that, and it was a sort of fashionable thing for a few years. But the remarkable thing is, when I investigated, I discovered that this astonishing Boston businessman called Frederick Tudor had, in fact, exported ice much further than London, much earlier. And he sent the first 180 tons of Massachusetts ice cut from Fresh Pond near Harvard in winter to Calcutta. Now, that's 16,000 miles. It took 4 months to get there. It did melt, but about two-thirds of it was left. And for 50 years, Boston exported ice to India, to Bombay, Madras, and Calcutta.
I'm afraid the heat wave has cut into our time, but I do have a question for
you.
There are lakes in Europe that freeze in the wintertime, too. Why didn't they develop an ice trade there?
The aristocracy had ice houses, and they would get their staff to cut their own ice and put it there. They used it for sort of cooling food. Prior to that, I mean, if you go back to the 17th century, there was a big ice trade in the Mediterranean, sweltering coast, but snow on the mountains, and snow was brought down from the mountains. The American trade was on a completely different scale, and although Frederick Tudor's idea was that he would mainly sell to the tropics, he sold to the West Indies, to Cuba, to Charleston, to Savannah, to New Orleans. In other words, you've got a cold north. And as the weather warmed during the 19th century, the central areas for ice cutting moved north up into Maine. And they developed a mechanism. They had horse plows to cut these huge blocks of ice. It became a huge industry in America, and that was unique. That never happened in Europe at all. A bit of ice might be cut. There might be a little ice house here. In America, it was enormous. The ice houses were built of timber. They could store 150,000 tons. New York and Washington were reliant on natural ice in 1900. That was the astonishing thing I discovered.
Well, Gavin Waitman,
triggered by this thing about somebody sent ice to London.
Gavin Waitman, thank you very much. I suppose you could use a big chunk of ice right about now, but you're in relatively cool Norfolk.
Yes, it's cooled down beautifully, and I'm not looking. I've got to go back to London next week, and I just hope it's cooled down by then.
Thanks very much, and you too, keep cool.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Gavin Waitman's book is The Frozen Water Trade, A True Story. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.